Amen. So let me ask you, does anyone feel busy right now? Anyone feel a little, I see some heads nodding, yep. Anyone feel busy? Anyone feel a little overwhelmed or a little wiped out, a little worn out at the end of your rope here at the end of the school year? Anyone feel like you're running on fumes? I know we're getting ready for summer vacations and some, you know, school teachers, you know, they're getting ready. They're limping to the end of the school year and they're like, I'm just got to make it like five more days and then I'm ready to go. And I've got my trips planned and I know where I'm going. I know what I'm doing, you know, and it's interesting. May is a deceptive time. So December, everyone is busy, right? We all know, like Christmas, you're buying a million Christmas gifts between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. You've got like a million parties you're going to. Everyone has a church party, small group party, staff party, your husband's staff party, your kid's school party. Like, you know, everyone's got a party. You got a million things you're doing at Christmas time. Everyone gets it. We're all like, everyone's like, yeah, we're busy. You're busy too? Yeah, so am I. Okay, cool. Yeah, we all get it. But May is one of those weird, deceptive times. I learned this as a pastor about 10 years ago, that May is actually as busy as December, but no one realizes it because we don't have the big parties and the Christmas and all that stuff. Because, you know, everyone's wrapping up their school year, especially if you have kids. Everyone's kind of wrapping up school years. Grandma and grandpa, you got the same thing. You know, just a picture into our little world. About a month ago, a couple weeks ago, our daughter had a science fair. She had a science project she had to work on. So we had to come up with a science project after Easter, the end of April. Then beginning of May, we had a science fair at one night at her school. So we went to this science fair. Then the last couple of weeks, our daughter, she's wrapping up her dance season, the season of dance that she's in this year. As she wrapped up her dance season, one weekend she had dance pictures on a Friday night. So Friday night, she spent all night there doing dance pictures. Then she had a dance rehearsal on Saturday morning. This was a special one, not the normal three that she has every week, but a special one for a special song that they were doing on Saturday. She had this dance rehearsal. Then that night, that Saturday night, they had a dance party to celebrate the end of their end of the dance season before they go on vacation. Then, you know, then last week we had, what do we have? We had our Mother's Day, activity here last Sunday. And so we had all the fun of Mother's Day, celebrating Mother's Day and everything like that. And then yesterday, my family, we were at a dance recital to close out her dance season. So from 1:30 in the afternoon until about 8:30 at night yesterday, we were doing dance recitals. And that's just one kid with one sport, with one event. I've talked to other people who have two kids who have dance and baseball or dance and soccer, and they're doing all of that for two different kids, or a high schooler who has marching band, or, you know, fill in the blank. You got all these things. So the month of May has this sneaky busyness that catches up with us and we don't realize it. A couple weeks ago in church even, we had a bunch of celebrations. A couple weeks ago, we celebrated our high school graduates. We had our young men and women stand here in the late service in front of their parents, and they made a pledge to pray for their moms and dads while they were away at college. And moms and dads made a pledge to pray for their kids as they were away at college. And we sent these kids off and said, you guys are missionaries going off to college and going off to school, and you're going to serve God wherever you're at. And so we sent them out as missionaries into the world that they're going to go to next year. So we celebrated them a couple of weeks ago. And we all know high schoolers are going to be walking across the stage in a few weeks, getting a rolled up piece of paper, wearing a pointy hat that they're going to throw in the air after they've listened to some old guy talk way too long. And they're falling asleep because of it. Last week, we celebrated Mothers with our Mother's Day activity and the bake-off, which we shared in the announcements. But we also celebrated our junior high youth. Our junior high youth who are going through confirmation class stood before us on last Sunday, and they said, I'm not here because my parents are making me come to church. I'm here because I'm a Christian, and this is my faith. And so we celebrated them last Sunday afternoon. And today we have our little ones. We got to see our second graders who are going into third grade and celebrate that transition in their lives. In the next service, we're going to celebrate our preschoolers who will be moving on to kindergarten. And, you know, we got these little kiddos who got their hair glued down, and they're going to sing a little song in the next service, and it's going to be so adorable. And what do we do as the church? How do we celebrate these milestones in the church? What did we do? We gave them the word. We gave them something they can hold on to, something they can take with them out wherever they go to be a blessing for them as they go forward for years to come. And with next steps come expectations, don't they? College graduates expect to get a job that they love. They expect to get a job that's going to pay the bills. High school graduates think they're going to change the world. They expect to solve all the world's problems in the next couple of years. And the preschool graduates, they expect to get ice cream after church. Different expectations for everyone, but you know, we'll see what we can do on all of those. But what happens when life doesn't meet your expectations? When the job that you got wasn't the job you thought you were getting? When you get on that hamster wheel and it just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going and going. And you're like, maybe this marriage, maybe this job, maybe this situation isn't the way I thought it was going to be. I didn't change the world how I thought I was going to. Or you lose that job, and then you're thrown into a panic. Burnout, fear, and depression begin to set in. This morning, we're going to take a look at the prophet Elijah from the book of 1 Kings chapter 9. If you have your Bible with you, go ahead and open it. If you want to pull out your tablet or your phone, feel free to pull out your Bible on your on an app and look at chapter 19 of 1 Kings. And we're going to see how Elijah experienced burnout in his life. And what we see in this story is a story starts with a heavyweight title bout, a heavenly heavyweight title bout that would rival Tyson versus Holyfield. I mean, this is all the big heavyweight bouts put into one. This is the prophets of Baal, the god of that nation, facing off against Elijah and Yahweh, the God of Israel. This is it. This is the creme de la creme. You know, and in the end, I'm not going to read the whole story. I'm just going to give you a real quick synopsis and encourage you to read chapter 18 for the background. But in the end, Elijah wins. God wins. God shows that he is in control, that he is the real, true, only God. And in the end, Elijah has all the false prophets killed because up until then, they'd been leading the people astray and leading the people into a pit. And so Elijah says, no more of that. You can't keep leading these people astray. You can't lead them off away from God. So he has them killed. But here's the problem. In that world, they didn't believe in the separation of church and state the way we do today. So when Elijah had those prophets killed, the queen wasn't too happy with them because those were her prophets. She worshiped Baal. She worshiped that idol. She hired those prophets. So when he had them killed, she was a little ticked off at him. And so she put a bounty on Elijah's head. And so it says this in 1 Kings 19. Ahab, who was the king, told Jezebel, his wife, all that Elijah had done and how he killed all the prophets with a sword. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. What did he do to them? He killed them. So she's saying, I'm going to kill you by this time tomorrow. So he was afraid, and he arose, and he ran for his life. And he asked, and he said, Lord, I want to die. It's enough for me now. Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's. He wanted to die. Life had no meaning. Life was meaningless for him. He lay down and he slept under a broom tree, and behold, an angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. And he took and he looked, and behold, there was by his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and he drank and he lay down again. The angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, for the journey's too great for you. So he arose and he ate and he drank, and he went in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. One minute, Elijah's the hero. The next minute, he's the zero. One minute, he's on top of the mountain. The next minute, he's in the pit. You ever felt that way? You ever been on that road that goes like this? And when you do, where do you go? How do you get better? Well, we're going to look at 4 points that we see in the story of Elijah here today. The first point is we rest. You rest your body. The first thing isn't something super spiritual or something super godly or anything like that. It's very, just very practical. Rest. Rest your body. 1 Kings 19, 5 through 8, what does it say? It said, he laid down. He fell asleep. He was worn out. He'd had this experience on this mountain. He had this crazy thing happen where he did this amazing thing with this battle between the gods. And he was exhausted. He ran away and he was exhausted. So it says he slept. Then he woke up, he ate and he drank. And then what did he do? He laid down again. He was really, really tired. Then the angel said to him, get up and eat again, for the journey's too much for you. There's a reason God tells us to take a Sabbath, because sometimes the best solution is just to take a nap. Sometimes the best solution is just to get rest, just to take time, go to bed early, eat a healthy meal, go to the gym, go for a walk, take care of your body. Did you know that in 2019, 789 million vacation days went unused and wasted in America? 789 million vacation days. That's 789 million days that someone could have gone on vacation and rested, but instead they chose not to, and they worked themselves to the bone. And I find it amazing to hear that stat from 2019, because what happened in early 2020? It's like God said, you know what? If you guys aren't going to do it, then I'll take matters into my own hands. Because if you notice during COVID, 2020 comes, and what happened? People were crawling up the walls. They were climbing up the walls because they were so bored, because they had to rest. They had to take time. They had to slow down. They had to ease up on the throttle. They couldn't leave their house. They couldn't do what they wanted. They had every TV show and movie ever made and food delivered to their house. But because we couldn't do stuff at a frantic pace, we were stressing out. I've noticed, just like I shared earlier about the month of May, that we've gotten back, now that we've gotten back to normal, people have added so much back into their lives again that they don't have time. And now we're worn out and exhausted again. Any of you feel like you're back in 2019 again, back to the same level of going you had back before COVID hit? Psalm 127 verse 2 says this, it is in vain that you rise up early and go to bed late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. None of us can burn the candle at both ends for very long, but we all try, don't we? My dad always tells me that my grandfather used to talk, whenever the Bible talks about, you know, prayer and fasting, you know, we always think of prayer and fasting. Oh, I'm supposed to pray and I'm supposed to fast. And my dad would always tell me, you know, that my grandfather would say to me, well, you know, I don't know if prayer and fasting is necessarily prayer and the discipline of fasting so much as how often do, when you're stressed, when you're anxious, when you're burned out, when you're depressed, what do? You don't eat. You don't feed yourself fruits and vegetables and healthy food. You'll grab a Snickers or you'll grab something because you're not hungry. Your stomach is tied up in knots and you're just like, I don't feel like having real food. So sometimes prayer and fasting just means that we're just so anxious that we're not eating appropriately. So what he tells us to do is rest, eat, do things that are healthy. That's what we see Elijah had to do here in this story in the very beginning. Second, we see it says, release your frustrations. Tell God how you feel. What does Elijah do here in our story? In verses 9 and 10, it says this, he came to a cave and he lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Imagine that. You're hiding in a cave. You're stressed out. You're anxious. You're depressed. You're bored. You're lonely. You're wiped out. And God comes to you and says, what are you doing? Why are you here? Why are you hiding out here? And what does Elijah say? He says, I've been jealous for the Lord of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've thrown down your altars. They've killed your prophets with the sword. And I am left here. And now they seek to take my life and kill me as well. Elijah's ticked. He's scared. He's afraid. And he's even, did you notice what he's doing? He's even pointing the finger at everyone else but himself. They failed. All the other people, all your people who call themselves, you know, your people, they've fallen away. They've done things wrong. They've stopped going to church. They've stopped worshiping God. They've torn down your altars. They've turned their back on you. But I'm the only one here who's faithful. And you notice what he's also saying? He's also saying, Lord, and if you knew what was right, you'd be helping me with this. If you were really, you know, on the ball, you would be fixing this for me so that I'm not running for my life. So kind of, you're kind of implicated in this as well, Lord. There's a little pity party, a little bitterness, a little anger, a little fear, a lot of things. And you know what God does? He tells Elijah, hey, knock it off. Quit being such a whiny baby. No, he doesn't do that. He listens. He listens. He says, Elijah, dump it. Share it. Talk to me. Tell me. I'm here. I'm listening. He tells everything he's feeling. He says he's afraid. He's ticked off. He doesn't think things are fair. And did you know that God isn't upset with you when you complain to him? We in the Western world, Western Christians, we've had this feeling like we're not supposed to complain to God. Like we're not supposed to vent to God. Everything, all of our prayers are supposed to be joy and peace and everything's supposed to be good. That's not true. God doesn't get mad at you when you get mad at him. He's not offended with you when you say you don't believe in him anymore or that you're mad at him or you think he's screwing things up. He wants you to get things off your chest because he cares how you feel. He's not going to walk out or abandon you. He's not going to say, this is the last straw. That was the last time. I'm not going to let you get mad at me one more time because, you know, he's not surprised. And like, oh, you feel that way? You feel sad? You feel depressed? I didn't know that. Tell me more. No. He knows. He knows before I know. 1 Peter 5:7 says, cast your cares on him. Why? Because he cares for you. He says, take all those burdens, all those stresses, all those pressures, everything you're feeling, and give it to him because he's got big shoulders. And I always tell people when they're struggling and when they say, oh, I don't want to talk to God. I don't want to tell God I'm angry with him. I don't want to tell God I'm struggling. I don't want to tell God all these things. You know, I say, you know, if we can't tell, you know, like when I, as a hospice chaplain, work with people who are grieving and they're angry. They're angry with their loved one for dying. They're angry with the doctor. They're angry with God sometimes. And I say, you know, God's okay with you telling him you're angry with him. If you can't tell God you're angry with him, I always say to people, you'd have to cut out half the book of Psalms. Because a lot of the book of Psalms is King David or the prophet saying, God, I don't see what you're doing here. I feel like you dropped the ball. I feel like you screwed up. I feel like, you know, things should be going out working better. I feel like things aren't fair. I feel like I should be getting better than I'm getting. I feel like you're forgetting about me and you've turned your back on me. And a lot of the book of Psalms is God's people saying, God, I don't really understand why you're doing this and I don't think it's right. But you know what? God's got big shoulders. He can listen. And he wants us to. Third thing we can do is when we vent and when we share, then we have to refocus ourselves on God. We have to refocus our attitude and our eyes on him. We have to get our eyes off our problems and get it on him. That's why sharing and venting is so important, because in the process of sharing and venting, we're practicing getting our eyes off ourselves and putting them on the one who can actually take care of us. If you look at the world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. But if you look at God, you'll be at rest. 1 Kings 19:11 says this, behold, the Lord passed by Elijah, and a great strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord wasn't in the wind. After the wind came an earthquake, but the Lord wasn't in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of a low whisper. There came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Think about that. First, he causes a strong wind to blow. Think of one of our monsoons that we've had. You know, you're sitting in your pool on a July afternoon, and you're just enjoying yourself, throwing the ball, playing with your family, and all of a sudden, 30 seconds later, all your palm trees are like this. and all your patio furniture is now in the pool with you. And you're like, where'd that happen? Where'd that come from? You know, and you're frantically running around, battening down the hatches of your house because everything's blowing away. But God isn't in the wind. Then God caused an earthquake. I don't know if you've ever experienced one. I grew up in Southern California, so I've been through a couple of those, the Northridge in Los Angeles in the 90s. But the one I remember is the one in the 80s that occurred up in the Bay Area that shut down a World Series game and broke the Bay Bridge up in the Bay Area. And I was all the way down Oceanside in San Diego, and I felt it. Talk about power. God gave us, you know, Elijah's like, hey, Lord, I don't think you got this right. I don't think you know what you're doing. I think you're screwing things up a little bit. And what does God do? He's like, okay, let me show you.